Hello, world. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show, the original personal computer radio show. We're also on live tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI FM 99.5, and we'll be taking live phone calls. But here, we're at PRN FM, and joining me is Michael Horowitz, our webmaster. You can listen to the stream and join us on the air with your telephone calls at PRN.FM to ask questions, share opinions, and make comments by calling the toll-free number 888-874-4888. Let me repeat that again. If you have a question for either myself or Michael Horowitz, there's a toll-free number you can call, 888-874-4888. For those who do not have internet access, and you may have some friends that they may not have internet access, but they also have a limited data plan, you can listen over the phone by dialing 712-775-6850. So if you have an unlimited plan for you, in other words, you don't have to pay for minutes, you can use the number 712-775-6850. And for more information, you can go to our website, pcradioshow.org. Tonight, we have Michael Horowitz, and he's our webmaster, and it's rare that I get him into a studio at any time. How you doing, Michael?
Good, good.
Michael, I know that you've been working on Chromebooks, and that's one of the things you're really looking hard at it. And it's been reported by Google that they're merging their Chrome and Android operating system into their laptop. And their laptop is called the Chromebook, and sometime late next year or in the last half of next year, they're coming with a new operating system called Andromeda OS. This is confusing. And looks like they're going to be using the Android operating system onto these Chromebooks and putting some of the Chrome OS on it. I don't know if you want to comment on it, but let's hear about what you're talking about when you're talking about running Android applications on a Chromebook.
Okay, yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, Hank. First off, the Chromebook by itself, 99% of the ones that are in existence now run a system called Chrome OS. So it looks like a normal laptop, but it's not running Windows, it's not running Mac OS, it's not running Linux. But what you're referring to is this: just a few days ago, there was news that Google is coming out with yet another operating system, as if Chrome OS and Android wasn't enough for them. And they're working to bring Chrome OS and Android together. The way that exists right now is that two Chromebooks can run Android apps. The way they're going to come together roughly a year from now is a brand new operating system, which is going to be mostly Android, but obviously with some features from Chrome OS. So, yeah, it's a little confusing.
Well, now, you have one of these notebooks that I was just looking at that can run both Android and Chrome OS. Do you have to do any switching, or is it just a matter of it's transparent, just running the application is all you have to do?
It's actually fairly easy, and I'm a big fan of this. There are millions of Android apps that now you can run on a Chromebook. That's the good news. It's easy to get started. You just go to the main menu on Chrome OS, and you'll see the Android Play Store is there, and you can install apps the same way you do on Android. That said, this is very, very new. There may be 99 different Chromebooks that you could go out and buy right now, and as we speak, only two of them can support Android.
Well, one of the things about Chromebooks is they're very dependent on connecting via the internet to run the applications, and Android is just like, it's the opposite. How do they resolve
it? I think every operating system nowadays is pretty much dependent on the internet. Now, when Chromebooks came out, that was the rap against them, that if you didn't have an internet connection, you could hardly do anything. That's largely true, but not completely true. You can use Google Docs completely offline. You can use Gmail completely offline. And there are text editors, which I've used offline. I've gone to a number of hacker conferences, and needless to say, you do not want to use the Wi-Fi at a hacker conference. So I would take my Chromebook and use the Chrome OS equivalent of Notepad and work just offline fine.
Can I use a printer without going through the internet?
Yeah, printers are a pain in the neck. Printers are the Achilles heel of, I think, both Android and Chrome OS. No, you cannot connect a printer directly to a Chromebook. And I don't think you can directly to an Android tablet either.
Are there any special special printers that you have to use to be able to make it easier, or you just have to go through the cloud to
It's not a question of making it easier. It's a question of making it possible. So, yeah, there's good news and bad news. The good news is that many printers can work with both Android and Chrome OS, but they do it through the Internet. They do it through something called Google Cloud Print. And if you have a printer that is Cloud Print enabled, very much like Apple's iOS, I think they call it iPrint, I'm not sure, you have to go into the printer and configure it so that it knows about your Google account. I have dealt with this twice with two different Google accounts on two different Chromebooks. In both cases, it wasn't hard to set it up, but in both cases, it broke. And when it breaks, you're screwed because Google was going to blame Canon, which makes the printer, and Canon is going to blame Google, which makes the software. So it is not a pleasant thing.
Well, you know, HP has what is called ePrinter, and you just send it as if it was a message to it, like an email, and it prints it for you. So in a way, you really don't have to figure out how to do printing other than say, I just treat it as if it was just another destination.
I have no experience with HP ePrint. You know, I don't have an HP Android device. I don't have an HP Chrome OS device. I don't know if it works on... Actually, I don't have an HP printer. So,
well, on your on this Chromebook that you have that can run Android, have you had a chance to run Netflix on it?
No. Netflix works from their website, so you don't need the Netflix Android app.
Well, the reason why I ask is because... if the processor is too slow, you get a lot of buffering and you get a lot of stutter motion.
In general, Chromebooks do not have a lot of horsepower. I mean, you can spend a lot and get a more expensive one, but they all have enough horsepower to do video, all of them.
All of them?
I mean, that was the beginning, a design from the beginning, yes. They can all play video just fine.
Do you have any idea what processor you have on the Chromebook that you just got?
Actually, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Some of them run Intel. Some of them run, what am I thinking of? The ARM-based processors.
Right. When you download applications, you have to be aware of which processor you're using, though, right?
No.
No?
No. In general, you don't. There's one oddball exception to that, which I didn't really want to go into, but I heard that you're familiar with Linux, you're familiar with Wine. Wine runs Windows apps under Linux. I read somewhere that there's a Wine for Android, but that would only work on an Intel device.
That's right, Intel.
But just having Android on a Chromebook is new enough and still being shaken out, so I'm not touching Wine on Android either.
Well, I see some very low-cost Chromebooks selling for really in the $150 range for brand new. They're not
refurbs. Brand new for $150?
Yeah,
really?
$150, $160, brand new. They're not refurbs. But it only with 16 gigabyte of, so-called mass storage card on it. Is 16 gigs enough?
Yes, I think 16 gig is enough. Of course, a lot of that depends if it's your only computer or if it's the second computer. But the reason I say it's enough is you can always stick in a USB flash drive and store files on that. Many Chromebooks have SD memory cards that you can store files on that. And on a 16 gigabyte Chromebook, of course, part of that is used for the operating system. So you get roughly 8 gigabytes of files to store locally on the machine. But of course, it comes with Google's Cloud Drive. So you can very, very easily just drag and drop. You can store files on Google's service, the one that competes with OneDrive from Microsoft.
By the way, you just said something that I should make sure. It's called OneDrive. You said something I just want to make sure that people are aware of, is that when you buy a Chromebook, and in fact, when you buy any computer today, you have to be very careful of what connectors are being used. Like, for instance, I find that some of the Chromebooks, they don't use a standard USB connector. They use a micro USB connector. And I find that... SanDisk has a flash drive with a micro USB connection on it.
Every Chromebook that I've read about or seen or touched has normal, ordinary USB.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Oh, in other words, some of them are so they try to make it so thin is that instead of using a USB connection, they use a micro USB connection. Very similar to what you have in a smartphone.
Okay.
For charging, okay? But you could also
for charging, right. I think there was one Chromebook model that you could charge from a micro USB, but still, I'm sure it had a normal, ordinary USB port. I mean, Chromebooks are not like Apple, where they throw away all the normal USB ports and replace them with something else.
Oh, let me ask you, do you have a 3.5 millimeter speaker jack on that?
Yes, it has a normal headphone jack.
Oh, okay. How about Bluetooth?
Yes, Chromebooks, as a rule, do Bluetooth.
Oh, okay.
I think they all do.
You think they do?
I think they all do, yes.
Okay. Do they all have RJ45 Ethernet connection?
It's very, very rare that they'll have an Ethernet connection. So if you want to plug in, and Hank and I are big fans of Ethernet connections because we're
especially,
old fogies.
Especially if you're doing online banking, you don't want to do Wi-Fi.
Yes. So you can buy a USB to Ethernet connector jack. I have a couple of them. They're roughly $10, $12.
Well, by the way, Michael, you write a column, Defensive Computing. That's for which publication?
Computer World.
Computer World.
Which used to be a magazine in the old days.
Well, now that you've been using a Chromebook, what defensive computing advice you might want to make people aware of when you use a Chromebook?
Well, I think Chromebooks are great for defensive computing because you don't have to do anything to them. You can't screw up by misconfiguring. You can't screw up by not updating software. If a Chromebook was used by a six-year-old child, they could not foul up the system. They are bulletproof. They automatically update themselves. And, of course, there's no viruses at all on Chrome OS. It's a completely different system. It's not Mac OS. It's not Linux. It's not Windows. It's a completely different system. There's no viruses. And everything's kept up to date automatically. So it is a great thing to do for defensive computing.
Well, let me ask you this one. One of the things that I, when I was, working with a Chromebook last year, was the
ease. Do you have one?
Someone asked me to help them with it, and I did.
Oh, so you never bought one for yourself, though?
Even
at $120 or something, you never bought one.
Well, actually, there's a different story with that. I'll go through that later with you, okay? But what her question was, for some reason, her grandchildren came in and played with the machine, and it was got all screwed up. And so she said, "What do I do?" I said, "Do a factory reset." And you know what the problem with the factory reset was?
Factory resets are pretty easy on a Chromebook.
Where do you get the instructions for it?
We don't have a computer that's online.
But if that's the only machine you have.
Well, you have to know it's called a power wash.
Okay.
You just Google Chromebook power wash, you'll find a million things.
Unfortunately, what Apple did.
If you don't know, it's called a power wash, though.
Unfortunately, Apple many years ago said things were so intuitive you don't need documentation. And there was no documentation on how to do a factory reset. So what I did was I called up HP and went through the process with them. But a little sheet
of paper. It's fairly simple. It really is.
It's simple if you know the answer.
Well, yeah, it's like three clicks.
Three clicks. You know
which they are, yes,
now,
of course.
Let me ask you, when you do a factory reset, is it truly a factory reset or is a factory reset and all the updates are then downloaded to it?
Well, that's a very interesting question, isn't it? It's a reset in that any files you've stored on the machine are wiped out. It's a reset. It's not a reset in that if you're running Android operating system version 52, but the machine shipped with operating system version 30, you're not going to go back to operating system version 30. You stay at operating system version 52. So it's half a reset, half not.
Well, the reason why I ask is because someone said to me, well, why don't you just do a reload, a factory reset online? But I said, but how do you know what the Wi-Fi is that you're connected to? You know, you have to put in every, you know, key in all the information, like what the SSID is and so on. Oh, let me ask you. How easy is it to find what Wi-Fi you have available?
It works on Chrome OS the same way it does on Windows or Mac OS.
So you can identify
what's
available.
It shows you a list of all the Wi-Fi networks in the neighborhood. You click on one and enter your password. Yeah.
So what percentage of your work is now done on a Chromebook?
I'm still a Windows guy. I still do the vast majority of my work on a Windows system. A lot of what I do involves typing, so I will admit to being addicted to the keyboards on ThinkPad laptops, the keyboards that they stopped using a few years ago. So I have a lot of old ThinkPads, and I just love those keyboards. So I stay with Windows because I love the keyboard.
Okay. Now, before I move on to the next subject, let me just tell people that if you have any questions for Michael about Chromebook, you can call 888-874-4888. And the next thing I want to ask Michael is, while we're talking about Chromebooks, you said, gee, I got a Windows notebook for under $150. Actually, even less than that, huh?
Yeah, that was an interesting experience. It was because Chromebooks became so popular, Microsoft was forced to lower the price of Windows.
No, actually, if it's less than $200, it's for free to the manufacturer.
Right. So there are quite a few Windows laptops that sell for $200 or a little more than $200. But they are the bottom of the line, the cheapest, crummiest machine that will run Windows. And I bought a refurb of those. I paid $120. If you want to buy Windows 10 now, it's $120. I got Windows 10 on a laptop for $120. So it is the cheapest, slowest possible machine. And it was kind of interesting because you don't expect it to be fast, and it's not all that fast. But what really scared me was it came with an early version of Windows 10, so I updated it to the version from last November. The current version is called the Anniversary Update. I'm not up to that yet. But not only did the update take like 5 hours because the machine's so slow, but I almost ran out of hard drive space. It came with a 32-gigabyte hard drive, which is fine on a Chromebook, but for Windows?
Now, wait a minute.
Windows really doesn't want to fit on 32 gigabytes.
When you say 32-gig hard drive, it really isn't a hard drive.
No, it's not a hard drive. Right. eMMC flash
right.
storage.
So the audience should realize that it is not a hard drive.
Yes. Chromebooks and the cheap Windows machines use the same type of flash storage. It's called eMMC. I don't know a lot about it, except that it's cheap and slow.
Now, the thing is that you asked me about, you know, I played around with Chromebook. Okay, let me answer you now that question, all right? Is that I've been looking at these low-cost units, and, of course, they don't really have a hard disk drive. And, my thought was, gee, can I run Windows on a Chromebook? Or can I take a low-cost Windows unit and run the Chrome operating system on it? And the answer is, it depends. You know, like everything else, nothing is absolute.
You can run Linux on a Chromebook.
No, Linux.
You can run Android on a Chromebook, but I do not think you can run Windows on a Chromebook.
Well, it depends, okay? That was a depend.
I haven't heard that.
It depends on the BIOS. It all depends on the BIOS, whether there are certain things to run Windows 10 today, you need UEFI capability, okay? And some of the BIOS has it, some don't have it. So if you really, if you're thinking of buying a low-cost Chromebook to put Windows on, it does not necessarily mean that you can do it, all
That's
right?
That's not worth the trouble. Well, you can buy a low-cost Windows machine
$200. I tried it. Or if you want to buy a low-cost Windows unit and put the Chrome operating system on, you know what? If you want a Chromebook, buy a Chromebook. If you want a Windows notebook, you buy a Windows notebook, okay?
Yeah.
This
cheap laptop I bought that came with Windows 10 Home Edition, of course, the cheapest version of Windows, it has only 2 gigabytes of RAM. I mean, it's really amazing that Windows 10 can run with that little RAM.
Yeah, do you know
that's how much RAM the Chromebook has, by the way.
No, by the way, most people don't realize is that when Microsoft came up with Windows 10, I said it's going to run slower than Windows 7. And the reason why it runs slower than Windows 7 is that half the operating system is in compressed mode on the storage unit.
They do that on hard drives,
right.
On small hard drives.
And the reason why they did
certainly
it was...
Certainly they do that on a 32-gigabyte hard
right.
drive like the
no,
cheap
no, no.
ones
it's
have.
Standard on the whole operating system.
I don't
system.
Think that's standard. Yes. I don't think they do it on a large hard drive.
Yes, it does, okay? Because if you look at the hidden partitions, you can see how it's split up. And the reason why they do it is very simple, is that they want to be able to run Windows 10 on smartphones, on tablets, and so on, and it will run slower. But I find that a 32 gig is barely minimal to run Windows 10. Because about
having done it, I would not do it again. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, you can do it. I don't even know if I have enough space to upgrade to the anniversary edition. I don't know if there's enough free space on the. We actually get 28 gigabytes or so by the time you're looking at it. I would not recommend it.
Okay.
I mean, I only paid $120, but still, I wouldn't
recommend
it.
Now, wait a minute. How much do you think it would cost to buy a Windows 10 Home Premium license?
I think it's $120.
It's about $80.
$80.
So
yeah.
you paid $40 for the piece of hardware.
Yeah, but I'm not sure I can install the latest version of the operating system because the hard drive is so small.
On this low-cost unit, and in fact, the same question applies for the Chromebook, is the battery replaceable?
Oh, no, of course not. Those days have long gone.
No, that's not true.
That's another thing I like about the ThinkPads, by the way, the old ones.
By the way, that's not true.
Nothing's replaceable.
I bought three brand new, I bought three new laptops this year. One of them is you cannot replace the battery. The other two, you can. And when you're traveling, you like to be able to carry an extra battery with you. However, you're telling me yours are good for about 10 hours, and I tell people that the 10 hours is like more like an 11 and 12-inch screen. If the larger screen you have, like some people say, I can get a Chromebook with a 15-inch screen, and they are available.
Yes.
But it will draw down on the battery on you.
Oh, sure, the bigger screen, yes. Yeah.
Now, what kind of resolutions you have on that? Is it good enough to run a 1080p?
It's good enough that I've never actually looked into it.
Yeah?
Well, the screen's only like 12 inches, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the cheap Chromebooks tend to have the lowest resolution, but we were just reading an article recently in Forbes about Chromebooks. That had an extremely high screen resolution, but that was a $600 Chromebook.
Well, now, wait a minute. The Google Pixel is
also very high screen resolution.
It's $1,300, though.
So they vary all over.
Yeah.
They're all over the map.
Well, if you have any questions for Michael, you can call 888-874-4888. And by the way, Michael, you're pointing me to an article that you're sort of incensed about. That's about Yahoo.
Oh, yeah. Yahoo, I think all nerds knew that Yahoo was bad news for a very long time. If you have a Yahoo account, you're inundated with spam. If you have a Gmail account, you're not. So that was clue number one. But I remember stories from years back where their website was hacked and this and that. So the latest thing doesn't strike me as news. But the latest thing, of course, is Google was hacked and 500 million people had all their information stolen. But the real scam part of that, the real disgrace there is they sat on this for 2 years before they told anyone. I mean, lots of companies get hacked, but how do you sit on it for 2 years?
Well, there's now a congressional movement to ask Yahoo those questions.
And it was a very interesting story in today's New York Times about this. Yahoo employed a lot of people who worked on security, and those people were rebuffed time and time again when they wanted to improve the internal security at Yahoo. And apparently a lot of those people eventually quit and went to work for other companies.
Well, I have a
very damning article about the management at Yahoo.
Well, one of the things that was brought out when Yahoo said that a lot of personal information was compromised, they talked about in one case, in one article, they talked about 200 million accounts, another one 500 million accounts. It turns out that they have 500 million accounts, but only 200 million of them are active. And I'm saying to myself, you got 300 million accounts that. Hey, wait a minute. I probably contributed that 300 million because I have a couple of Yahoo accounts. And I said to myself, gee, you know, I should delete it or get off of it because I don't use it, I do have information on it. And it could be like passwords that may or may not be live or that, you know, similar to what I use on other systems.
Oh, personal data. That is a big no-no. That is a terrible, terrible thing to do, to reuse a password. And this is exactly why. If your Yahoo password was used somewhere else, you're just asking for trouble.
Well, I know some people on the use of passwords, what they say is, I didn't use the same passwords. I do a variation on it. That's a no-no, too, because people can figure out your variation. You know, they say, you know, I would make the first letter capital, and I'll make the second letter, you know, and so on. Eventually, you could work it out. So with Yahoo, what do you think is going to happen to them? Because they, I think Verizon's picking them up.
Verizon agreed to buy Yahoo for, I think, $4.8 billion.
Do you think they still want them now?
And according to what Verizon said, they were not aware of this at the time when they agreed to pay $4.8 billion. So it'll be very, very interesting to see what happens.
Well, you know, people, when things happen, you would want them to be upfront with it immediately and own up to it, you know. And one of the things that came out a couple weeks ago, and that's Wells Fargo, where they, you know, I said to myself, you know, what they're doing is illegal, or let's say maybe not illegal, but unethical. And Joe said to me, what does it have to do with computing? And I'm saying to myself, it has a lot to do with computing. What it is that here you got management encouraging their workers to sign up new accounts for credit cards. Doesn't it ever occur to them that they see all these increase in sign up for credit card, but the total number of credit cards remain the same because they were canceling them the next day? I mean, when, you know, if you tell me
it was a company that had rotted on the inside.
Right. In other words, if don't tell me those reports are not available, because obviously you say, hey, you look at your account and you say, okay, I'm sitting at X million. And after running it for a couple of years, it doesn't change. And yet you're paying out all these commissions. Come on, there's something wrong with that.
Well, sure. The big shots knew, but the big shots benefited, I believe, by the increase in the stock price.
And the other thing that bothers me is that the Consumer Financial
Protection
Fraud Protection Bureau, okay, someone asked them a question. How about other banks? They said, well, we only look at other banks when there are complaints. Come on, wait a minute. This is something that is being done, you know. I'm going to use some names, okay? Normally, we'd hate to use it, right? But the Bank of America, you know how many accounts have been open in the last 2 months for me? And I have to keep going to get them canceled. And when you get them canceled, oh, don't worry. You know, it's not going to cost you anything.
Really? Yeah. Bank of America is opening scam accounts for their
I didn't say scam accounts. They're
accounts that you didn't request or no one in your family requested?
Correct.
Wow. I had not heard that.
No. By the way, they're not the only ones. There are many other banks doing it, and many department stores are doing it, too. There's many department stores doing it.
Wow.
And okay. So
just to switch subjects, one last thing about the Yahoo. It's been reported everywhere that people's personal information at Yahoo was stolen. And I, of course, have a Yahoo account. None of my personal information was stolen. And that's because I lie like a bandit. When it comes to those security questions, I do not tell the truth. I don't come anywhere near the truth. So
yeah.
Yahoo may have lost my birth date, but that was not my birth date. Yahoo may have asked where I went to high school, but I did not. Not only didn't I give them the name of a high school.
No, wait a minute.
I didn't even give them a name of a thing. I would just make up random letters.
Now, wait a minute. You gave the name John Smith. You know how many John Smiths there are?
Yeah. I mean, this is an important lesson about security questions. You do not, I don't think, for defensive computing, you do not ever want to answer those truthfully. And in fact, when I signed on to my Yahoo account, when the big option they offered was to turn off all the security questions.
You know, we're talking.
I don't know. You said you have a Yahoo account. You haven't logged on to change your password in the last week or two?
Because it's a password that no one. It's a dead password. I don't reuse passwords. Okay.
I don't either. Yeah. Good for it.
Yeah.
By
the way, we're going to take a quick break to say that. Well, I'm going to ask Michael to make some public service announcements, and after that, we're going to come and go through some of the other articles.
Okay. These are. All these meetings are free and open to the public. The first is from the Computer Learning Center in Ewing, New Jersey. They are meeting Tuesday, October 4th at 2 p.m. The topic is Craigslist, what it is and how to use it. And I'm actually personally very interested in that because I have to dispose of some furniture and I'd love to give it away.
You mean it's not Chromebooks you're getting rid of?
No, furniture.
Okay.
They meet in the community room at 999 Lower Ferry Road in Ewing, New Jersey. The Danbury Area Computer Society is having their next meeting the same day, Tuesday, October 4th. at 6:30 p.m., which apparently, according to the note here, is earlier than their normal time. They meet in the Danbury Hospital Auditorium in Danbury, Connecticut. Their topic is election attitude. I'm not sure what election attitude means. The Westchester PC Users Group is going to be meeting on October 6th at 7 p.m. They're going to be celebrating their 35th anniversary. Boy, personal computers are getting old, 35 years. They meet Thursday at the Keller Williams Realty Office, 120 Bloomingdale Road on the first floor. That's in White Plains, New York. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey is meeting on Friday, October 7th at 8 p.m. They meet at the Scotch Plains Rescue Squad in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. Their topic is an introduction to R. Just the letter R, not A-R-E. Apparently, that's a programming language. I guess someone newer than C. I don't know what happened to D-E-F. Okay, the Rockland PC Users Group meets on Tuesday, October 11th at 7:15. They meet in the Rasso Room on the fourth floor of the Palisades Mall in West Nyack. And apparently, they have not published their topic for their next meeting. And last but not least, we have the Brookdale Computer Users Group, which meets Friday, October 21st at 7 p.m. They meet in the MAS building, room 100. That's Brookdale Community College in Lincroft, New Jersey. And this is an important topic, ID theft and how to avoid it.
Thank you, Michael. You're the webmaster for our website, pcradioshow.org. And if they want to make announcements, how should they do it, Michael?
Just email us.
And email to?
We have a new email account. I think it's pcradio@gmail.com.
Yes, we have that. And you could also leave us an email at PC.
It's on the website, yeah.
You could make it Michael, you can make it Hank, you can make it Joe at pcradio.org.
pcradioshow.org.
pcradioshow.org.
I think the new one, right, the Twitter account ends with 212, but the Gmail account is just pcradio@gmail.com.
This bit is so confusing. Well, you know, one of the things that I'm... You know, people say, you know, I try not to be political about anything because when you argue about politics or religion, it's like arguing with a war. You know, no one's listening. But I think this one, I do have I do have some concerns about a major health insurer in Chicago, the Healthcare Service Corporation (HCSC), which employs 22,000 people. Is planning to outsource part of its IT operation. And the employees were recently informed that 70% of the positions in the IT group would be outsourced. And the number of employees affected could be somewhere around 540 people. And the layoffs are planned to be in February to April of next year. Now, those jobs will be moved to an outsourcer, including monitoring and incident resolution, help desk support, and problem and patch management. Other areas would be partially outsourced, such as infrastructure and product development and other parts of automation, and they did not announce the name of the outsourced vendor. Now, employees anticipating that the IT work would be more offshore that, one of the things that they have to do is that to collect their severance pay, they have to train their replacement. I can see the face you made, Michael.
Yeah, we've seen this so many times.
And before. The workers are really concerned that outsourcing will follow the playbook used at other companies, where employees train H-1B visa holders brought in by contractors, and they must do the training. You know, that's not the intent of what the H-1B was. H-1B was to bring in skill help that doesn't exist that you can't get. Editorial comment.
I think there were two intents to H-1B. There was a public intent and a private intent. You repeated the public one, but nobody believes that.
My editorial comment
is that the private one is just to get cheap labor.
Good IT people will be out of work, and some of them, let's be honest about it, depending on their age, they're not going to be able to find ready replacement jobs. H-1B abuse hurts Americans. They do.
Now, yeah, imagine that. Computer nerds are now in the same boat as factory workers.
Well, it's been going on a long time. You know, H-1B programs have been going on for about 20 years now. And the biggest abuse of it is that with many of these H-1B workers, if it's overseas, they're overseas. But if they come into the United States as H-1B workers, Then many of them have on a 3-year contract for the outsourcer, and after that, they're supposed to go home. They don't go home. They stay and they hide in the woodwork. And that accounts for a lot of what we call, the term is illegal immigrants, and they're not Mexicans. They're not. I want to tell you, many of them are Indians and Chinese. And, you know,
and
now,
other countries where the technology education is good and where the wages are low.
No, wait a minute. Now, the University of California is outsourcing, and they're laying off their IT employees, and they're sending those jobs overseas. And Representative Zoe Lofgren, who's a Democrat from California, is making a big to-do about it. She's saying, how are they going to tell students that go into the STEM field, STEM meaning science, technology, engineering, and math fields, when they are, you know, when they are doing as much as they can do in the number, you know, let's face it, if you're going to lay off the people and you're teaching STEM students, you know how much of a student loan they're building up?
Yeah, it's not setting a good example. Yeah.
Well,
come to our school, pay us a ton of money, learn this great trade, but oh, by the way, everyone else who's working in that same field, we're firing them.
And of course, with the space program, we pay the Russians to spend, to send their rockets up there, because we laid off 8,000 NASA engineers. And of course, the excuse is we don't have the skill sets to do it. You know what? If you have to train your replacement people, don't tell me we don't have the skill set. I get very upset with that. And don't tell me that there's not enough people. If you have the people who have been laid off who don't have to train the people to replace them, and then you're still short, then I'll buy it, okay? And, you know, especially these schools, they push STEM. I know a lot of schools are pushing STEM. They're not getting work. And I mean, when you say half the people are finding work, what about the other half? They're not finding work.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that to me before the show. You didn't say it on the air. That there's some statistic that half the graduates in the STEM field?
51% in the STEM field can find work related to their study. The other 49, they work in much lower capacity jobs or still looking. They're still looking. I know some of them. Now, we're into really October now, okay? And many of them graduate in May and June. Many of them are still looking for work. Many of them still looking for work. It's not a pleasant thing, but that's another story in itself.
Yeah,
you know?
And college costs a lot more than when you and I went to it.
Oh, hey, you know what? I hate to tell you what it cost me to go to college
Don't tell us.
Well, you know, in those days, I had to work while going to college, but to get to work, the subway was 10 cents, the bus was 10 cents, and the only thing that went down in price was the ferry ride. I had to take the ferry to get the Staten Island ferry. That was a nickel. You know what the Staten Island ferry costs today? Nothing. It's absolutely free both ways. Yeah.
It was a nickel for years and years and years and years.
And you know why it's nothing? They don't charge for it at all? Because to impose a nickel charge, the employees that you need wasn't worth the effort. It didn't pay. By the way,
maintaining the machines, et cetera.
For those who have not been on the Staten Island Ferry recently, it's a beautiful ride. They got aquariums on both sides. It's really beautiful. It's clean. It's well kept.
I haven't done it in a long time.
Well, now what you know, we'll already spit about the H-1B. There's a court ruling that a judge is going to come up with. And it's a U.S. District Court Judge Michael Simon in Oregon. And what it is that he has denied the government's dismissal of a motion to dismiss a lawsuit against the H-1B lottery. Now, the H-1B lottery was originally first come, first serve. And so little guys can get into it. Big guys can get into it. But now what the big guys are doing, they overwhelm the lottery system. So that, you know, it's like they have more balls in you know, to be picked. And for this year, they have 85,000 H-1B visas, and they have over 200,000, I think like 225,000 people asking for visas. And it just keeps going. By the way, the whole thing started with 15,000. you know, when they first...
You know much more about this than I do.
Well, I just get incensed with it. And you know, some of the people, we talk about, you know, the tech companies. And let's be honest, that a lot of the tech companies are abusing it. Intel has a large number. Microsoft has a large number. But I was surprised the Board of Education even uses it to get secretaries. You would say, now, wait a minute.
Here in New York City?
Yep. Oh, boy. Hey, Michael, there was a couple of things that I'd like to run by you. I just want to see what your reaction is, okay? You know, you bought a you bought a couple of computers, and I'm pretty sure that you tell your wife every machine you bought.
Yeah, just as you do, right?
Wait a minute. Don't you tell her all the new machines that you're hiding? I'm sorry, not hiding, that you bought.
It would be interesting for the two of us to have a contest who has the most computers in their house.
Wait a minute. There's one machine I have at home that is in working condition that I know you don't have. Okay, I still have a CPM machine.
I never had a CPM machine.
Well, that goes back into the 1970s. Okay, do you have an XP machine still running?
Yes.
Me too.
I actually brought an XP machine into my apartment just today.
Just today?
Yes. Oh. One that was someone was retiring.
Oh, okay. Now let me ask you, since how about your own personal machine that you've been using, as opposed to you just inherited a door stopper?
Well, I'm a Windows 7 person.
Oh, okay. What about 8 and 8.1?
No interest in Windows. I have one machine just so I could try it, but no real interest in it.
No Visa?
No. No, I skipped Visa completely.
So XP is really your work machine, right?
No, Windows 7.
I'm sorry, 7, right. Yeah. And by the way, we should tell people that Windows 7 still is being supported in terms of security through January of 2020.
And boy, what we're going to do in January of 2020.
Very simple.
I have no idea.
Yes, you do.
Well, I hate Windows 10. I know you like it. Well, so I don't know what I'm going to do in 2020.
Well, let me put it this way. There are things in Windows 10 that there are features in it that I like, okay? And like being able to save a screen very quickly. You see something run by the screen, you just hit a button and you got it, as opposed to saying, you know, I got to do a shift print screen, put it in a paint, and, you know, save all that.
By the way, the Chromebook works like that too. You just hit a couple keys and it takes a screenshot and saves it as a file.
So
the more
you use the Chromebook, you're going to find that the Windows 7 is kind of short, right, in certain areas.
Well, I love the keyboard.
You love... No, wait a minute.
And, of course, you know, there's a million Windows applications that don't exist on Chrome OS. So, yeah, I mean...
Hmm. Well, on Windows 7, okay, I think the advice is someone had sent me a piece of email, Michael, saying that I have Windows 7. I missed the deadline for going to get a free copy of Windows 10. I wrote back to her saying, yes, you can still do it, okay. However, if you are happy with Windows 7, you can still run it. Just remember,
till January of 2020.
But only in terms of security updates you will get, and also in terms of enhancements. You're not going to get any more enhancements on Windows 7, okay?
That's fine with me. Security. I think that's fine with most people.
Hey, Michael, let me just interrupt. We have a caller. Maybe you have a question. And the caller is from Queens. Okay. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. May I ask your name and just tell us what you wanted to talk about?
Sure. My name is Akko Ben.
Akko Ben, yes.
And I heard you talking about your old XP, and I believe he has an old XP.
We both have old XPs.
Yeah, more than one.
Well, I think I got you guys beat.
No,
I still have a Timex Sinclair.
Well, like I said,
I remember that. I had one of those.
let me put it this way. You don't have me beat because I said I have a CPM machine. I know you don't go...
I got one of those.
Oh, yeah? Okay, well...
I got one of those, so I do have you beat.
No, you don't.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't have you beat.
You still have the MSI unit then, right?
Huh?
I still have the MSI unit.
Oh, my God.
Well, wait a minute. What do you think I was talking about?
Boy, that Timex Sinclair.
Okay,
oh
I give up.
Is that a long time ago?
Did you have any comments for Michael? Because we've been talking about Chromebooks, and I would tell
No, I'm just sitting here listening to Michael, and it's very interesting. So I'm going to get back in the background and listen to what he has to say.
Okay, all right. And thank you for that call. And you know what? I think the caller was trying to see if he could outdo us in terms of old machines.
Yeah, I think Hank and I are pack rats when it comes to old computers. When it comes to
I see that.
Actually, I was ready to junk that IMSI unit, and a friend said to me, before you junk it, go on eBay, see what you can get for it. I was shocked. It's in the thousands of dollars.
Is it?
Wow. Yes.
It is transitioned from junk into antique?
Yeah, it is.
Ooh, I might have to look up mine.
Well, actually, my IMSI unit is really, it's IMSI based with a Cromemco front panel running a Z80 on it. And the it was all hand-wired, there were 22 connectors. Each connector had 100 soldering points on it. And you could smell the solder. It was very therapeutic.
You can tell Hank goes way back.
Yes. Oh, and listen, I had that 1K memory on it too. 1K. I didn't say 1 meg. I didn't say 1 gig. I said 1K.
Yeah, that sounds like my Timex. I actually had 2K.
Yeah, 2K
on the Timex.
Didn't the Timex save data on a cassette deck? Didn't it use tape cassette as its storage?
It had plug-in storage. It had storage like two. I think it had like 5K, and then you can plug in another 15K with the little box they had.
Well, but I just want to tell you that Michael's graduated to the Chromebook now. I think that he loves it. He carries it, and then when he finds that the app is no longer there, he just goes back to his Windows 7.
I must say, however, I do have an Apple laptop,
mm-hmm.
and I must say the keyboard is outstanding on it. I'm not a big fan of the Macintosh system. I have a MacBook Air. Boy, it's a great keyboard. Really is nice.
You know, I have two great keyboards I have at home. I still have the original IBM.
Full-size external keyboards you're talking about?
Yep, that's external.
All those old IBM keyboards?
I still have the original IBM keyboard that is all metal. No plastic, all metal. I think that if I throw it on the floor, it will hurt the floor. If I put it on concrete, it'll crack the concrete. I mean, that's how good it is. And then I have a more modern keyboard, which is not cheap. It was like $140.
For a keyboard?
Yep. Listen, hey, you know what? It's a hobby, and with a hobby, it's not how much it costs. It's how much you're willing to pay for the hobby, right?
Do you use this $140 keyboard on a regular basis?
Yes, except when my grandchildren come in, I pull it off and I put it elsewhere.
You don't want them to spill a lot.
Did you have to rewire that in order to use it?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Really?
Well, you got to remember that these keyboards, I have different connectors for it. I can go USB, I can go PS2, I can go to all the different different interfaces, with the different cables I have. But I'll tell you that, by the way, Michael, I have to tell you that that IBM keyboard is three times the weight of your Chromebook. All right. Listen, thank you very much for that call.
I'm going to listen offline. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Have a good day.
All right. Now, the other thing I want to mention to you, Michael, is that last year, Joe had asked me a very simple question. What is the differential in cost between a solid-state drive and a hard disk drive? And that says it's about like a 10-to-15-to-1 ratio. It was really a lot.
Okay, just to be clear, when you say hard disk drive, because the terminology is difficult here, you mean a mechanical hard drive, a spinning disk hard drive.
And wait, let me qualify that. I'm talking
like the
about
term mechanical hard drive versus.
Well, there are different kind of hard drives. There's 1.8, 2.5, 3.5, 5.25. I'm talking about the standard consumer hard drives, which is 2.5 for notebooks and 3.5 for desktops. But now you find that the laptop notebooks 2.5 is being put into desktops, making the desktop very small now. And using an apples-to-apples comparison, if I could use that term, is that you take a solid-state drive and a mechanical hard disk drive from the same manufacturer. So you have the equivalence, okay? And the equivalence now is maybe about 3.5-to-1 ratio. You could buy a 1 terabyte solid state drive from Western Digital, but of course the name they use is SanDisk because they bought SanDisk, for about $220, and a good, decent Western Digital 1 terabyte drive is about $60 to $70.
Okay, now for a solid state hard drive, 1 terabyte is huge.
Yes.
I mean, I buy 256 gigabytes, and I find that's plenty for my personal use. So 1 terabyte, wow.
Well, no, wait a minute. You don't take pictures.
That's true.
Okay.
That would change everything.
I take a lot of digital pictures. I recently went to a special occasion, and my wife said, you didn't sit down to eat. Why don't you? You know, this is a banquet. You're supposed to be enjoying yourself. I says, well, okay. So I sat down afterwards. She says, how many pictures did you take? I don't know. I took only about 300-400 pictures.
And how many gigabytes is that?
Actually, those 400 took less than 2 gigabytes in terms of storage.
Oh, that's not much.
However, with all the editing and so on, you end up using a lot. Now, do you do video editing?
No.
Oh, okay. No. Do you do music editing?
No.
Well,
that's why I can live with 256 gigabyte solid state hard drive.
So you're the typical a Chromebook user where you're just using it for going to the web and very simple office functions. That's it.
Yes.
And if you don't do anything of that, then it's you know what, the Chromebook is you know what, it's perfect. And you know, I wish I could have done that with my grandchildren, except that the school has these special programs that needs Windows to run on it. And
Chromebooks in school is their biggest market.
Unfortunately,
the vast majority of Chromebooks that are sold to schools.
Have you ever heard of the core curriculum?
No.
Core curriculum is that you educate kids in a set fashion, okay? And you may come up with the right answer using a different method of solving it, but if you don't come up with their way of teaching it, you get zero. Oh, you got to look up core curriculum. Core curriculum is a travesty on education as far as I'm concerned.
Yet another reason that we're lucky we went to school when we did?
Yeah, because, you know, if Einstein had core curriculum, he would have failed. Because, now, I remember when I was in high school, a teacher had said to me, she had given me a very low mark before the Regents of 85. I said, wait a minute, I've been doing perfectly in the classroom. She says, yeah, I know. So what am I doing wrong? You're not doing it the way I taught it, even though you get the right answer. So why am I getting an 85? Because you weren't listening. I happened to be one of the few people on the state Regents to get 100. So she compromised and gave me a 95. I mean, you know, it's a, hey, that's part of life, you know. But,
okay, so your point is that, was that solid-state hard drives are getting cheaper relative to mechanical hard drives.
And the mechanical hard drives are coming down in price, too. And you know what's going to happen? They're not going to disappear, right? In the consumer market, it's going to be the solid-state drive or solid-state memory, as you know, the memory cards will be the storage of choice. But the mechanical ones, they're up into the 6 gig range. They're going up even higher. They're using
6 terabytes.
I'm sorry, 6 terabytes and higher. They're going to be in the data centers, and that's what's going to happen.
Well, they're going to be external hard drives, or if you're more a nerd like Hank and I, a network-attached storage, a NAS device.
Well, that's still part of the system.
So that's for that's for your massive amount of storage. External hard drives with 4 terabytes is a great thing.
Hey, Michael, before we sign off, let me just ask you, what's your next column about in defensive computing?
Actually, I think I'm going to write about Opera web browser, which version 40 they included a VPN as part of the web browser.
Have you tested the VPN in Opera?
A little, yes.
How is it?
What's interesting about it is it's the easy for someone who's never used a VPN. It's the easiest possible way to get started because it's built right into the browser. You don't even have to install any software. You don't even need an account.
Wow.
You don't even need to give me your email address. Plus, it's free and it's unlimited. So I think.
Okay. Listen, we're going to sign off because we're running out of time. But Michael, I hope you can come back live. I know you've been doing a great job on the Personal Computer Show by being the webmaster in the background. But you know what? You know, you got to come out to the open. Okay, so the website for the Personal Computer Show is pcradioshow.org, and we communicate via Twitter at PCRadio212. We can be heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. on PRN.FM and at 9 p.m. on WBAI-FM 99.5. In the meantime, stay in touch and keep on computing, and back up, back up, and back up. And on behalf of Michael Horowitz and myself, we thank you for listening, and until we meet again, same station, same time next week, happy computing and good night.